I want the answer to be yes, right, to this question, because I think if it is, then it basically changes the frame of the way that I would be doing my job.
It's important in your understanding of quantum mechanics at some stage of your life that you believe in the Everett interpretation. The shorter, the better.
You've had these opinions for so much longer than maybe like people like my age. Like, how is your opinion had not changed with like ChatGPT? Did that not like make you think something different, or you've seen it all before?
Is the brain computational, or do we need to abandon the analogy to account for thought and consciousness? Roger, would you take us away?
Well, I think it might be fair to say that the cerebellum is perhaps like a computer, but that's not what people are usually talking about. They really think about the cerebrum, this part on the top, not the part underneath at the back. And in fact, there are more neurons, as I now realize, I've been taught, in the cerebellum than there are in the cerebrum. But the cerebellum seems to be completely unconscious. So what is consciousness doing, which is different from what a computer does? See, some people might say that when the computers get powerful enough, they will become conscious. And that's all there is to it. It's just computability or not. I mean, how much computer power you have. But I don't think that's the answer at all. And I formed my view, I think, quite early on when I went to lectures which were nothing to do with my subject. When I went to Cambridge as a graduate student and I went to lectures, well, Herman Bondi on general relativity, which has nothing to do with that, what I should be doing, although it became very important in what I later did. Paul Dirac on quantum mechanics, which is a great honor, and a man called Steen on mathematical logic. And the mathematical logic, when I learnt about the famous theorem of Gödel, Kurt Gödel, I had no idea about it before. I played around with mathematical logic with one of my colleagues as an undergraduate. I find it great fun. But what I learnt from this man called Steen, who gave a talk on Gödel's theorem, well, it was on computability and the idea of what a computer is. And there are various different kinds of mathematical systems which are models of computing. But then the thing that I learned was this famous theorem of Gödel, which showed that, I mean, it's a very simple thing. He produces a statement which you can see has to be true, but you can't prove. Now, how do you know it's true? You see, you have certain sets of rules and procedure of trying to prove a thing in mathematics, and you might say, well, those are our reasons for believing something is true. If you follow these rules right, it tells you it's true. But then the statement that Gödel constructs, and it's very clever to do this, you can see what it means. Is that what it means is, I am not provable by those rules. It's a clever thing to make it do that, of course. But when you see that, it says, well, let's suppose it's false. Then it is provable by the rules. And since you set up the rules explicitly to know that things that are provable by it have to be true, therefore it must be true and therefore not provable by the rules. Now, how do we know that it's true? We know it's true not by use of the rules, but by understanding why the rules only give you truths. And I found this absolutely amazing, because it tells you that understanding something is not just a matter of computation. There's something else going on which requires the notion of a very understanding something, you have to be aware of it. It doesn't make much sense to say a thing understands something if it isn't aware of it.
Okay.
It's not a normal use of language. So I formed this view, which I still have, is that pure computation does not give us what the human brain can do. And when I say the human brain, I don't mean the cerebellum, because I think that may well be very much like a computer. It's also organized much more sensibly, you might say. The left side controls the left, the right side the right. Oh, that's the sensible thing to do. What does this stupid old cerebrum do? Well, it crosses everything over in some way which people don't really understand at all. all sorts of things about it which seem very mysterious. And there is something about being conscious which is quite different from computation. So now that's my point of view anyway.
Okay,
sorry if I took too long.
No, not to worry at all, Roger. I think you're entitled.
Okay.
Fantastic. Max, can we turn to you, please? Do you think that the brain is computational, or should we kind of abandon that as an analogy?
Well, you know, that's a trick question. Computer, because you have to specify whether you mean, is it a quantum computer or a classical computer? So two very, very different things. The whole universe, I mean, since Roger and Sabrina and I all love physics, I think we can agree that the brain is a blob of quarks and electrons, these elementary particles moving around in some very special way.
Do we all agree?
We're good.
Okay, there's no dissent. Please proceed, Max. You're in safe territory.
Wonderful. Good. So it's a physical system. And we know that the laws of physics are fundamentally quantum mechanical. We know that our whole universe can be thought of, if you want, as a quantum computer. So I don't think... Well, we can argue about that, whether anyone disagrees that a quantum computer could do what our brain can. But I want to be a little more provocative here, so we spice things up a little bit. Since Roger and I have sparred a little bit about this in the academic literature, I think that our particular brain that we have, even though it has some quantum processes in it, I don't think the quantum processes are actually necessary for the intelligence that it has. And I think that the most striking evidence for that has come actually in recent years from the amazing success of AI. We have things like ChatGPT-5 now that can win a gold medal in the math Olympiad and do all sorts of really, really amazing cognitive tasks, even though we know it is not a quantum computer. It's a purely classical computer. And then in terms of the consciousness thing, which is something quite different, you know, intelligence is basically a measure of what our brain can do, how it can act in the world, if it can solve problems or not. Consciousness is the subjective experience we have. There, I would love nothing more than having a quantum computer in my head, because I think they're so cool. But unfortunately, I think the components we have in our own head don't make very good quantum computers, because they're warm and wet, and the quantum effects get spoiled a little bit too fast. We can nerd out later about microtubules and the Oort ore and things like that. But I'm putting my money there on classical computers.
Amazing. Okay. Well, thank you, Max, for that. Sabrina?
Okay. Well, the short answer is going to be I don't know. But the longer, I guess, I think I'm just super grateful to be here. And like the fact they indulge me when they let me pick a panel. So the reason why I really wanted to be on this panel, well, first of all, faculty, you learn that you're supposed to use giving talks or giving lectures as an excuse to learn about the topic. And I'm just super excited about that. But I think of it as a practicing theoretical physicist, a lot of my work really is based off of stuff that Roger built over his lifetime, the more mainstream things. And I live in this world of abstractions. And then I think I kind of got AI filled at some point, seeing the cool things where when you're working memory or the amount of things you can deal with in this understanding this theoretical corpus, suddenly there's new tools for that. It got me super excited. And then the questions around consciousness or this thing, it's I think there is a part where I want the answer to be yes, right, to this question, because I think if it is, then it basically kind of changes the frame of the way that I would be doing my job, which is that normally I just ignore any notion of there being an observer or something. And I kind of think of just building these mathematical frameworks, and I don't kind of spend too much of my time in practice, even though other physicists do, on if am I a different thing, right? And so if the brain were computational, I feel like it puts it into that arena of what physicists are studying. And so that I now can see some emergent phenomena coming out of, the structure of how a neural net's working, as opposed to more algorithmic statement. And it just, so basically my whole thing of this panel is I just want to figure out whether or not I actually want that to be true, or that's a good thing for me, or whether I don't want it to be true because I want us to be special and not be replaced soon. So yeah,
that's where you're at. Okay. Not sure. Fantastic. Well, I'm glad. I feel like that's much more my position, Sabrina. I'm going to level with you. Okay, well, let's get right into it in that case. So Is computer code or mathematics the structure of thought in the universe? Roger?
Well, I'm not quite sure how.
I think what they're getting at here is basically if the brain is computational, does that mean that thought is like a computer code?
But I don't think the brain is computational. I think that's wrong.
Tell us more.
Max was suggesting that quantum mechanics or something, but that's not good enough. Quantum mechanics is not the answer, partly because quantum mechanics, as it exists, is not a sensible theory. Now, that's a stupid thing to say, of course, but I mean, it's not a consistent picture. Quantum mechanics, when I learned about quantum mechanics, I got very confused by it. Not just because it's a confusing theory, which it is, because it's not really a consistent picture of the world. You have to do what's called collapsing the wave function. At a certain stage, you do what's making an observation or something like that. You can evolve a system according to the Schrodinger equation, that's quantum mechanics. You have a thing called the wave function, you have an equation, Schrodinger equation, which tells you how this wave function evolves in time, and then that should tell you what the thing is in the future. The trouble is it's wrong. It's not wrong because Schrodinger made a mistake or anything like that. No, it's a wonderful equation. It's just that quantum mechanics does not follow that, because at a certain stage, you do what is called collapsing the wave function. Now, what does that mean? You start to interpret your equation as giving you probabilities of different results. That's not what Schrodinger's equation tells you. Schrodinger's equation tells you have a very well specific, it tells you how the wave function evolves from time to time to time to time. In 100 years, it would tell you what it is. That's not what the world does, because in a certain stage, things get too big in a certain sense. I could be more explicit about that, but it's probably not the time to do that. And then you have to change the rules. The rules are not right. When I say quantum mechanics is fundamentally wrong, I'm not trying to be rude about quantum mechanics. It's a brilliant theory. It's an amazing theory. It enables you to establish all sorts of things we couldn't do in classical mechanics. But it can't be right, because it tells you just evolve the thing in one way, and it doesn't ever give you the probabilities which are what you're supposed to use in quantum mechanics. And those, you see, work out probabilities of this or this or this or this. It doesn't tell you which. It just says you've got these different things all together. Max, it doesn't tell you which happens.
Max, I feel like you've inched closer and closer to the camera. You've definitely got something. You've got something to say.
Well, I can. First of all, it's such an honor to be with all three of you here on this stage. I'm fans of all of you in different ways, and I very much agree with Roger that quantum mechanics struck me as super confusing when I first came across it, for the very same reason. Roger has this very bold and provocative idea that gravity comes in and is related to this so-called wave function collapse. But there is another take on it, which I like better. I hope I'm not offending anybody who's from Denmark in the audience, but I think the so-called Copenhagen interpretation is just rubbish, that at some point, something random happens. There was a grad student named Hugh Everett in the 50s who had this much simpler explanation. He said, suppose the Schrodinger equation is just true, always. Well, what happens then is that sometimes a particle ends up at two places at once. And since we're made of particles, that means that we can also end up in two places at once. Oh. And if you end up, for example, doing a quantum experiment, and then you decide that as a result of that, you're either going to be transported into room one or room two in some hotel. When you wake up, if you're actually in both of them, there's going to be a copy of you waking up in each, and it's going to seem random when you go and look at your room number afterwards. So Everett pointed out, basically, that even if there's no randomness in the computer, in the world at all, but the world of reality is much bigger, so that you get these parallel realities that sort of branch out, like in the movie Sliding Doors, then it's going to feel exactly like quantum mechanics feels. And he re-derived all the math, all the correct predictions from there. And the truth is that since then, people have done more and more experiments looking for the so-called collapse of the wave function with ever bigger things. A friend of mine, Nurgis Mavavala, she put a mirror that weighs over 1 kilogram in two different places at once. some people put a photon, a particle of light, on two different islands, two different Canary Islands at once, separated by hundreds of kilometers. No one has ever found any evidence that the Copenhagen people were actually right. And I would put my money on the fact that Everett was right instead. Reality is just much bigger than we thought. And that means that whenever you make a snap decision as to whether to go to this festival or stay home, you know, maybe there's another version of you who isn't here tonight, who stayed home, who's just as real as you.
Steady on, Max. I'm getting vertigo here. So just so I'm really clear, because I saw you nodding as well here, Sabrina, we've put things in two places at the same time. That's actually happened?
I mean, I think that implicitly in the equations that I'm using, I never would do this kind of operation of measurement being treated differently. So it probably is closer to many worlds or whatever the right word for, yeah.
Was that a yes?
Yes, I think so. Oh, no. I mean, so the thing is like basically Perimeter Institute has like your colleagues who like do this for a living, like they think about quantum mechanics and then you just like run with it and then realize like, what do I actually know about quantum? It's just implicitly in the fact that our loops in my diagrams, that's about it. Basically, what Max is saying is roughly the way that I guess we would kind of tell ourselves at night, like, that's what's happening. It's okay, you know. But I'm not saying that it's right. That's not a good reason, but it's the one that I think is the mainstream enough.
Talk about it like that, but Max, you were sort of implying that Amira was in two places at once.
Yeah, you know, Roger...
Yeah, of course. I mean...
I just want to add that if you feel emotionally weirded out by this, that... What feels weird is the idea that our universe is more strange than we thought, more counterintuitive than we thought. But we already know that. In fact, Roger Penrose has shown that himself, also with his amazing work on black holes, which I can promise, the more you learn about black holes, the more weird they feel. Okay. And I think we just embrace the weirdness of our universe and view that as part of its charm.
Well, I'm feeling very reassured. Fantastic. I mean, okay, but just to get back to the main question here. So we, in terms of the question of like, you know, is the brain computational? Does it actually do computation the way mathematics and computers do computers? Roger, you've been very clear about the fact that you don't agree.
Well, I think part of it, you see, I was saying the cerebellum could well be like a computer. And it's there for a good reason, probably. I mean, it does things which you don't need to be conscious of, but it's not conscious.
I mean, but is it not just an analogy? I mean, we existed before and computers have come later. I mean, are we just not sort of drinking our own Kool-Aid here by saying, oh, well, we've made this computer device and hang on now, let's use that same concept to consider ourselves?
Well, it's not an unreasonable idea, you see, to think that we're sort of brain is a computer of some sort. It's quite a reasonable idea. I just happen to think it's wrong. But also, you see this issue of the Everett interpretation was brought up, where you see all these different alternatives happen at once. Now, I've always often had the view that it's important in your understanding of quantum mechanics at some stage of your life that you believe in the Everett interpretation. The shorter, the better.
My goodness! I mean, I'm going to... Sabrina, Max, are we doing okay here, everyone?
I'll take it. No, I guess my question would be, or like, I guess I want to like just try pry at Roger's opinions here, in the sense that, I guess it's impressive because I was trying to like do some research. Like, you've had these opinions for so much longer than maybe like, so this is like your books were written like way before like maybe like people like my age, like I mean like. I've only lived for such a small amount of time, and AI to me is not this whole long history, which I know it actually is. How is your opinion had not changed with like ChatGPT or like GPT, like, you know, 4.0 or whatever? Like, in the sense that like the things that you can say, like maybe more algorithmically, if I want to program something to like actuate an arm and do like grab something versus like how large language models are able to mimic human behavior so much better. Like, did that not like make you think something different, or you've seen it all before?
Mostly the key word is the word understanding.
Yeah.
You see, you can follow rules, all right. I mean, we're not as good as computers at doing that, but we can do that too. But we don't understand what we're doing. The understanding is the key point. But we don't know I don't know what understanding means. All I know is that it's a feature of consciousness. It doesn't make sense to say of a device that it understands something if it's not even aware of it. I mean, that's just usage of language, you might say. But there is something much more profound in being conscious of something. And, I mean, there is this sort of view that once you make a computer complicated enough or something, it suddenly becomes aware. I just don't believe that. There's no reason to believe that. There's something quite different involved in understanding things, in being aware of things, of feeling things, which is not part of computations. And I do think it's part of the physical world. Absolutely. I'm with Max on that completely. I believe that the brain is following the laws of physics. Sure, I believe all that. We don't have a good picture of the laws of physics. And you say, what about quantum mechanics? That's the best. Well, that's a little bit of a question. It's the best theory we might have of small things, but it's not that good a theory because it doesn't really tell you what happens. It produces this array of possibilities, and you can produce an argument, various people did, that you can interpret this as sort of probabilities of different possibilities, but it doesn't give you what happens. It's not an answer. Quantum mechanics is not an answer to the way the universe operates. It's a partial answer. It's incomplete because we don't understand how the collapse of the wave function.
I mean, why are you so convinced that it's like a like collapse of the wave function is the thing that, I mean, like we don't understand X and therefore this other thing isn't true, isn't necessarily like a
trying to suggest that they're all there at this. I mean, this is the Everett point of view, that all these different alternatives really coexist at the same time.
But why that is the reason why we can't.
But that doesn't explain anything.
Of course.
It's not.
You mean empirically, right? You can't actually test. It doesn't explain the next thing that happens in time, for example.
Well, it doesn't need to give you. You see, it's a different thing from say it's got to be a deterministic evolution. I mean, that's different. It doesn't do that, sure. I mean, you see, good old Newtonian mechanics, it does give you a definite, you know what the initial state is, and you know what the equations of evolution are, and you can, in principle, know what the state would be in 10 minutes or in 10 years. Quantum mechanics also says that wrongly, because it gives you the Schrodinger equation, tells you, if you have the Schrodinger equation now, tells you what that equation would be in 10 years, 100 years. It's just the wrong answer. It's the wrong answer because at some stage you've got to stand back and say, no, no, these probability amplitudes, as they're called, you turn them into probabilities. And that's a cheat because that's not part of the Schrodinger equation.
Max, you look like you're dying.
He's probably dying.
Oh, what was happening?
No, I'm loving this. It's so interesting. We're talking about two separate things here which should not be conflated. One is intelligence. And the other is consciousness.
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below.
With a free trial, you can enjoy the full talk and thousands more.
Thank you for being part of the conversation.